This is Unmind with Great Cloud Michael Elliston Roshi.
Election Year Zen Number 4. Independence, Interdependence. What is all that noise coming from the noosphere? It's just the campaign. In the last episode of Unmind, we concluded our review of the design intent of the three treasures of Buddhism. In this segment, we return to the current state of the campaign for political leadership of the country. My intent in these essays regarding the practice of Zen in an election year cycle is not to persuade or convince anyone of anything other than the efficacy of sitting in Zazen to straighten this mess out for yourself. I will try to make the case that it, the political discourse, is not at all disconnected from the three treasures. After all, the design of the three branches of government and even partisan politics are nothing more than manifestations of the community writ large, however subject to manipulation and distortion by special interest groups and individuals who may not honor the harmony of the larger Sangha as their highest ideal. To be clear, I am not interested in getting out the vote or influencing your vote. I regard politics as only one of the multifarious and perhaps nefarious arenas of civic action available to us in modern times. But because the unremitting and relentless campaign is currently taking all the oxygen out of the air and threatens to do so for some time, more than ever should we turn to our own counsel and tend to our own knitting on the cushion. Zen meditation provides a safe haven, a dependable redoubt for refreshing our resolve to take action in the most compassionate way, but informed by the wisdom of the ancestors. The political pageantry of the moment is subject to the cardinal marks of dukkha, impermanence, imperfection, and insubstantiality, perhaps more than any other dimension of existence. We can regret or rejoice at its passing. It is also a given that most of those in positions of power and influence do not have the wisdom and compassion of the Dharma forming their guiding principles, nor even that of the founding documents of the Republic. Nor can we claim that the clarity of Buddha's wisdom or Buddha nature resides at the heart of the American cult of the individual. In spite of the complexity, confusion, and downright contrariness of human nature, in coming to terms with the polity, I think I speak for all the ancestors of Zen in saying that our recommendation remains the same regarding the spectrum or spectacle of governance across the countries of the globe and the span of centuries since the advent of Buddhism in India. Physical samadhi is first in priority, more centered and balanced, less off-kilter in the form of sitting upright and still, in Zazen as well as Kinhin, walking meditation. Then follows emotional samadhi, manifesting as more calmness, less anxiety. Then mental samadhi, fostering more clarity and less confusion, especially as to the deeper meaning and ramifications of the compassionate teachings. And finally, social samadhi, finding more harmony and less friction in personal and social relationships. Girding our loins, as it were, with the sword of Manjushri, cutting through delusion and re-entering the marketplace with bliss-bestowing hands. By starting at the center of things, the personal sphere, eventually we may find our way in the social, natural, and even the universal spheres of influence that surround us, bringing the eyes and ears and helping hands of the Bodhisattva to bear upon the suffering of the world. A large dollop of humility and perhaps a healthy sense of humor may be in order. We have introduced the notion that what we are doing in Zen training is, after all, only developing our penchant for independent thinking, along with its counterpart, a capacity for interdependent action. This is the tightrope we walk, while keeping all the balls in the air of the many influences surrounding us. The nexus of near infinite causes and conditions can bring about analysis paralysis if we succumb to the usual approach to defining and solving problems based on self-defense. What is called for is recognition and acceptance of the Japanese proverb cited by Master Dogen. Fall down 7 times, get up 8. We need to give ourselves permission to fail in the social realm. Partisanship in politics requires that we suspend independent thinking. We are often prevailed upon to subscribe to views and opinions that may not be fully vetted or justified in order to take advantage of the opportunities of the moment to win over sufficient numbers of voters to the cause. But when we examine the sources of the ideological divide, it seems that underlying factors which would fall into the skanda of mental formations or unconscious volition may play a greater role than we think. Further to the point, a recent article in the New York Times by Neil Gross, a professor of sociology at Colby College, titled, "Are You Thinking for Yourself?" approach the problem of ideological division from a demographical perspective, quoting, "If you're trying to guess whether people are Republicans or Democrats, knowing a few basic facts about them will take you a long way. What's their race and gender? How far did they get in school? What part of the country do they live in, and is their community urban, suburban, or rural?" He goes on to support the point with examples, which we will not detail here. His basic conclusion is that your demographics often determine what you believe in regards to your general worldview, as well as political leanings. A seemingly determinative factor is that of the influence of parents and family. A majority of partisans of the new generation reflect the ideology of their parentage, apparently going back for generations. From this, we might conclude that the vast majority of voters are going to be biased in favor of their family and social history from childhood, nature and nurture, and not likely to be persuaded by rational or ideological argument to switch allegiances. This suggests that the majority of campaign messages and ads attempting to sway so-called independents and moderates to join one camp or another may be a waste of time and money. It might be more effective to track the generational histories of constituencies, homing in on the genetically captive audience, known colloquially as the base. New coalitions may be limited by this unseen dimension, holding steady through generations. Please indulge an exercise involving simple mathematics, something we do not often engage in to make a point about Zen or the teachings of Buddhism. But we have to admit that a major factor in differentiating our lives and times from those of our Zen ancestors is the burgeoning population and geometrically expanding demographics of the modern age. Pardon me while I do the math with an assist from my onboard calculator, using search results from online sources, both inaccessible to the ancients. The current U.S. population is estimated at about 333 million, of which roughly 240 million, or 72% of the total, are eligible to vote. In 2020, around 66% of those eligible actually registered and voted, a record, but representative of less than 50% of the total population. The Democrat candidate won the election with a little over 51% of the vote, while the Republican candidate lost with about 47% of the vote. Political spending in the 2020 election totaled $14.4 billion, more than doubling the total cost of the also record-breaking 2016 cycle, according to OpenSecrets.org. So the last victory came at a cost of about $2,000 a vote, if my math is correct. Even though a record 60-plus percent of eligible voters turned out in the 2020 election, the final decision was made by a minuscule fraction, 0.03% of the total, assuming the count was accurate, and that my math is close enough for jazz. Throw in the Electoral College with its handful of swing states, and the final decision comes down to a cohort less than the population of the metro area of Dallas, Fort Worth, Arlington, Texas. Yet the winners and losers not only endeavor to rewrite history to favor their cause, they also claim to enjoy the mandate of the American people, a tiny portion of whom actually put them in office or threw them out. The losing side famously claimed the election was stolen through voter fraud, though the Electoral College tally came in at 306 to 232, a decisive difference, along with the overage of multiple millions of voters in the popular vote. But, as we hasten to say, that's a story for another day. Who are we to argue the truth of politics? Zen calls upon us to challenge the truth of our very senses. So we have to look at whatever leaders we get as being, quote, the leaders we deserve, in the context of a system demonstrably incapable of representing the, quote, will of the people, let alone, quote, government of the people, by the people, for the people. The fact that a large percentage opt out and others are disenfranchised belies a foundational tenet of the Democratic Republic, quote, one man, one vote. This remains an ideal, one that may be forever out of reach, even with our vaunted technical connectivity. It may come down to a matter of free will or the inexorable ignorance of the modern hoi polloi. Nobody is legally required to vote, after all, which may be a good thing. Further into the article, Gross generalizes, quote, although there are certainly people whose politics defy generalization, the underlying demographic tendencies are powerful predictors of belief, powerful enough that elections have become as much a turnout game as an exercise in persuasion. Do tell. But if it takes a 2 grand pop to get a single person to the polls, one has to question whether it is possible to turn that massive push into a pull, to borrow from marketing terminology. Of course, there are those who would question whether it is wise to target people who are disinclined to vote in the first place. How informed would their choices likely be if they are finally dragged out of their inertia and into the polls? Gross concludes his essay with a turn to something deeper, the humanity underlying our behavior, including political activism. Quote, "By all means, let's duke it out in the public sphere and at the ballot box. You'll fight for your interests and I'll fight for mine. That's democracy in a big, diverse, boisterous nation. But if we could bear in mind that we sometimes stumble into our most passionately held beliefs, the tenor of our discourse might be a bit saner and more cordial. The fact that we are all deeply social creatures, in politics and otherwise, underscores our shared humanity, something that we would be wise to never lose sight of." Whether or not you agree with the implicit assumption that making the tenor of our public discourse saner and more cordial would be a good thing, many seem to feel the opposite, that the squeaker the wheel, the more grease it will get. Most would probably agree with the appeal to our shared humanity and recognize the lamentable truism of frequently stumbling into our most passionately held beliefs. Aye, there's the rub, that our actions within the social sphere, including the political arena, are too often based on belief rather than reality. Here is where Zen comes in. The deeper implicit assumption is that our shared humanity is necessarily a good thing. But I think Buddhism points to something deeper. We do not aspire to human nature in Zen. We aspire to Buddha nature, meaning to wake up to the deeper meaning and implications of our lives, our very existence, beyond the immediate and local causes and conditions impinging upon us, including the political machinations of our fellow travelers. Again, my intent in these essays is to emphasize the necessity of the practice of Zen in an election year cycle, not to persuade you of anything other than the efficacy of sitting in Zazen to straighten this mess out for yourself. That said, or resaid, I do encourage you to vote. You will make the right choice, informed by your meditation, I am sure. In the next episode of Unmind, we will return to considerations of more broadly focused adaptation of design thinking principles of problem definition and potential solutions in everyday life, of which politics is only one, if one of the most noisy and noisome.
Unmind is a production of the Atlanta Soto Zen Center in Atlanta, Georgia, and the Silent Thunder Order. Find us on the web at aszc.org. You can support these teachings by PayPal to donate at storder.org. Gassho.